Well, now we go on to the next concept after distribution, which is consumption. The whole act of marketing, production is to reach the product to the final consumer, to take the product to the final consumer, because we started with human wants. To fulfill the wants, people are going to buy the products, which takes us to the concept of consumption. Economics is consumption does not mean eating and drinking. I mean, literature mein, if I'm drinking a water, I'll say, oh, I'm consuming water. What is consumption in economics? It's destruction or use of utilities for satisfying human wants. So in consumption, we are linking the concept of human wants and the concept of utility. And we frame the definition of consumption as use of utilities for fulfilling of human wants. Now the consumers and consumption, both are interconnected concept, and this concept has been very well taken up by an economist called J.M. Keynes. He said, consumption no doubt is a destruction of utilities to satisfy human wants, but when a consumer is consuming a product, before buying the product, he is always going to compare the price of the product with marginal utility of the product. As you see here, the formula given is price of X is equal to marginal utility of X. What does this formula indicate? This formula indicates that the consumer will always prefer to compare the price that is there for the product with the utility derived from the product. If you remember, students, when I was discussing about demand, desire, ability, willingness, I said that many a times consumers have ability, they have the desire, but they still don't end up buying the product because they feel the price is too high than the utility of the product. That concept is again brought back here, that the act of consumption totally depends on price. Therefore, there is a very, very important concept of law of demand associated with this. This is an equality, we call this as law of equi-marginal utility. As a customer, when I am spending money, I am always interested in looking at the MRP and the utility of the product. Therefore, branded stuff, high quality products are always having a higher price in the market. When you talk of Britannia, when you talk of definitely the larger brands, the premium brands and companies who have got long-standing reputation are all because they are giving quality products, in other words, utility products to the customer for which they are charging a higher price. So many a times the customer have full faith on the product's quality, utility, and they feel the price they are paying is equal to the utility. So as long as the price and the utility are going together, the customer will buy the product and he will be in the equilibrium. Consumption, where we are comparing the price and the utility. Now J.M. Keynes is trying to highlight here that always a consumer is buying not just one product but n number of products. And here Alfred Marshall has joined in. Alfred Marshall said that a rational consumer is a person who will always try to get maximum utility from every rupee or every dollar that he is spending on the product. If I am suppose buying three different product which I would call as X, Y, Z, then to be in equilibrium as per the law, I will always divide the utility with the price, and I will see to it that if I am spending an X amount on a given product, then it has to be equal to the other products, utility and price. So if you are spending your money on shopping, food and entertainment, let's assume X as entertainment, Y as shopping and Z as food. You are spending your money on shopping as well as on entertainment as well as on food. It should happen that at the end of the day, when you have spent your money on all the three different variety of products, you are a satisfied customer. You have got the maximum satisfaction with the amount of rupee that you have spent. So you have got the best deal. We have some customers who are always looking for discount offers. They are always going and visiting stores where there are huge discounts on branded products. Whenever Globus, Shoppers Stop comes up with huge discount offers, you'll find that they are flooded with n number of consumers. That's because of the law of equi-marginal utility. The customer feels that whatever money they are spending for the product, they are getting the maximum benefit by spending that rupee. So this is where the law of equi-marginal utility stands. From this, we move ahead to a consumption function. Now, what is a consumption function? Purely understanding the behavior of a consumer's consumption pattern. J.M. Keynes have tried to introduce a variable. He says consumption depends on income. He says consumption and income are strongly interrelated. Consumption depends on income. Well, if I'm not earning, how am I going to spend? I need to earn money because I need to satisfy my wants. Why do we work? Why do we go to work and why do we desire that we should earn money? You might have seen many a time people switching over to different jobs. They are moving from a particular job to a job which gives them even more income, even higher return for their services. That's because if I have more money, I have more capacity to satisfy the needs of my family members, myself. Definitely, I need more income. Apart from emotional, spiritual aspects, you need money to satisfy most of your wants. Because most of our material wants are definitely satisfied with material things, the goods and services. And therefore, we need minimum capacity to buy. We are living in a monetary world where all things that are being sold in the market have a price tag. So income becomes our purchasing power. Let's move ahead to consumption. J.M. Keynes have given us two consumption function equations. He has said consumption, that is C, is equal to F function bracket Y. Y stands for income. He says consumption is functionally dependent on income. That means when my income goes up, my consumption will also change. Now you look at your own self. Just look at the past 6 months or past 2 years, actually those who are working. How much was your income and how much of that were you spending? Has your increase in income made you spend more? We have heard credit card holders end up spending more than people who have liquid cash. Is it true? If I have debit and credit card, I end up actually spending more. So my consumption totally depends on my income. Consumption and income will give us saving, because income minus consumption is equal to saving. If I am earning 100 rupees and I am spending 90 rupees, how much am I saving? 10. That means 100% of income may say, if I am spending 80% or say 90%, accordingly I can derive the saving. So it's a very simple formula, minus consumption from income to get the saving. Now this concept is very important, especially for the banks, people who are working with financial sector. It's very important to know your country's saving and consumption and income relationship. This takes us to the concept of average propensity to save and average propensity, marginal propensity to save. This is given by a very simple formula. Propensity is desire. So we take average per annum, average income, average consumption to get average savings. Marginal concept always comes with additional, like we discussed in utility. Additional increase in income, additional increase in consumption, so therefore additional increase in savings. It is very important for us as an individual saver. I mean, when I start working, I know that with my increase in income, my expenses are also going to increase. Because we have studied, human wants are never ending. So as our wants go on increasing, we are definitely going to earn more, spend more. But a time comes when we also start looking seriously at our savings. So income minus consumption will give us to savings. That is marginal propensity to save. My desire to save will keep on increasing with my additional responsibilities in life. You will always find that initially young people, when they start earning with less of responsibilities, they always want to spend more of their money. You know, there's a very initial financial freedom which is coming in your hands. So let's just chill out. Let's just spend our money and then we'll think about saving. As responsibilities start emerging in life, you start seriously thinking over savings. And definitely, every rational person must keep some amount of income for uncertainties in life. Life is full of uncertainties and challenges. If you don't have money to meet the challenges, you have to borrow or you have to beg or steal, which is really very bad. Yes, people always manage their time and manage their money. This is what G.M. Keynes is highlighting here. This is how the graph of consumption, income and savings will look like. J.M. Keynes says that on the x-axis, okay, we are looking at what happens to the savings, income and consumption relation. It is found that as your income goes on increasing, your consumption is also increasing. But as you see, students, here the graph of income is going straight upwards, which means income is increasing fast with higher and higher proportion. But the consumption graph is not increasing in the same proportion. So there is a gap between these two graphs and this gap is widening. The widening gap is a clear indication of savings increasing slowly. So income minus consumption is equal to savings. This graph is reflecting the relation between income minus consumption, which is equal to savings. So in your life, when your income graph is going up, see to it that if the consumption graph should move in this angle. That means it is increasing but at a slower rate. As income increases, consumption increases but not in the same proportion. I would put it like this: rate of increase in consumption is always less than the rate of increase in income, as quoted by J.M. Keynes, which gives us savings. So from this we come to the conclusion that as income increases, consumption increases at a lesser rate, and only then savings will increase at a higher rate. So when any country wants its savings rate to increase, consumption should increase at a lesser proportion than increase in income. Now we move on to the next concept, cost. Cost is very closely connected with production. What is cost? Expenditure incurred by the producer in the process of production. In fact, all the resources which are used in the production process are not free. There is always a expense incurred. That takes us to the cost of the company. All those who are from the field of finance always know about the balance sheet, the assets, the liabilities, the cost, that is the expenditure, and the income. So cost has several concepts in economics also. We divide cost into various types: fixed cost, variable cost, sunk cost, etc., which you are going to study in depth when you go further with chapters 7 and 8. For the time being, in understanding the concept, cost is purely expenditure incurred in production. Many a times students get confused between the selling price and the cost. So just to make you clarify that price is purely a different concept and cost is purely based on expenses incurred by the company in production. Like I said, price and cost are always confused. So the very next concept that you have is price. Price is the money value of a product. Here you have to be very clear about two concepts: normal price and market price. Economists say that normal price is the price of anything which prevails for long run. Parle-G biscuit, 4 rupees per pack, is a normal price. The price which does not fluctuate very fast and which prolongs for a long period of time, which is stable, is the normal price. Market price is the price which keeps on fluctuating, especially prices of petrol, diesel, prices of seasonal products come under market price. They are the prices which increase very fast and fluctuates very fast. Share market. The prices of shares can be purely connected with market price. Price of electronics, price of durable goods come under normal price. So when you talk about price, you have to be very clear with two concepts, normal and market price. The next concept is monopoly. Monopoly is a single seller, and when I was discussing this topic, if you remember, I had taken an example of aviation sector, and there was an article in Economic Times just 3 days back which says end of monopoly of Air India. Now, monopoly is purely where a single operator, a single seller tries to capture the market and does not allow any other competitor to enter into the business field. When India got independence and the planning commission had to decide on which sectors will come under state monopoly, the concept of monopoly started getting highlighted. Monopoly is nothing but a single seller controlling the entire market supply. Whenever monopoly word comes, profit is immediately coming as a conclusion, because we believe companies want to become monopolist because they want to control the market and get maximum profit. In economics, profit is said to be a reward which goes to the organization, that is the entrepreneur. Profit, simple formula is revenue minus cost. The cost that we are going to consider here is explicit cost. Explicit cost are those costs which are accountable. Now, a simple example, you go to work, whatever is the cost you are incurring, your travel cost and all, will be called as explicit cost. Explicit cost are all those costs for which the company maintains an accounts. Payment made to outsiders, payment made to the workers, purchase of a raw material, whatever expenses which are incurred, these expenses are recorded in the books of account, and therefore they are called as explicit cost. So whenever we talk of accounting profit, our formula is revenue minus explicit cost, and this profit is called as gross profit. So what is gross profit? Purely total revenue minus total explicit cost. Since a company makes use of capital goods, and all capital goods are subject to depreciation, when we try to minus the depreciation and taxes from the gross profit, we derive net profit. In business, gross profit and net profit are the two important concepts that accounts always try to maintain. The next concept is optimization. Ultimately, in the subject of economics, optimization principle plays a very important role. We have started this chapter with resources and wants, and we have realized that resources are scarce. Day by day, the natural resources are fastly depleting and they are becoming scarce. So what is very important for us is to minimize the waste. That means maximum utilization of the resources. That brings us to the concept of optimization. Whenever we are making use of our time, our money or any resources, we should see to it that we should minimize the waste and make the maximum possible use of that resource so that we have optimum use of that resource. Another concept that economists find it very relevant in business is average and marginal. Always when we talk of total issues, we need to split it into average and marginal. Average cost, average revenue, average learning, anything, you can associate any concept with average. Just remember the formula that average is total cost divided by total units. So you can look at your whole lecture, you can look at the total time spent for the lecture and the total amount of knowledge you have grasped. You will understand how much is the average learning that has taken place on your site. Marginal. Every additional cost for every additional output. It is the same as we have done in marginal utility. This is how the formula is, which we have discussed before. Total divided by total unit. We go to the next concept, which is elasticity. When we talk of elasticity, it is the responsiveness. It is the degree of responsiveness of one variable which is brought about with some other variable. So elasticity is like price and demand. Very, very popularly used concept is elasticity of demand. So what is the responsiveness of the market demand to the change in price? Airfares or the price of petrol. The moment the price of petrol shoots up, how do the customers react is elasticity. When the price of a particular share falls, how do the investor class behave is elasticity. So elasticity is purely a concept of responsiveness. Well, after understanding all the various concepts, we are coming to the final conclusion where we are splitting up all the concepts that we have studied into two categories. As you can see here, students, we have written in the first category micro and in the second category macro. You have to be very clear that in economics, you are going to learn n number of variables which can be divided into micro and macro. Let us understand the main difference of micro and macro with the following points. The first point is unit of study. The unit of study under micro is individual. That means micro always looks at any topic from an individual unit point of view. Whereas macro looks at the unit of study from aggregate. When I talk of individual want, my individual want, I say it is a micro unit. But when I'm talking about wants of millions of Indians, it is a macro concept. Second, method. In microeconomics, most of the topics that are studied by economists is by using slicing method, studying in parts. So when I want to study about price, I will take up one product and then I'll divide into various categories of price. Slicing method is taking it detached from the economy, from the whole country, and understanding one concept at a time. Whereas in macro, we use lumping method. We try to understand the interrelationship between all the variables. So price, its effect on cost, its effect on supply, its effect on demand. That means when we study one variable in macro, we try to associate it with all the other interrelated variables. The third is subject matter. Most of the topics in micro are focused on product pricing and factor pricing. Product pricing takes us to demand and supply. If you remember, Alfred Marshall has said that demand and supply are two blades of a scissor. Macro, the most important concepts are national income, trade cycles, general price level. So these are the topics that you will always find when you open the books of macroeconomics. Microeconomics books will take you to chapters like demand, supply, market, distribution, etc. We move on now to the next basis. As I said, micro, it is independent, slicing. This is the same thing as the method. You study independently each topic under microeconomics. Whereas under macro, you cannot study any single topic independently. When I want to study about inflation, which is a part of price, I will have to connect inflation with effect on national income, inflation affecting economic growth, monetary policy, that is the Reserve Bank of India policy, and its effect on all the other sectors. The next point is the names. Micro is very popular for the name of Alfred Marshall. It is actually advocated by Alfred Marshall, whereas macro is advocated by J.M. Keynes. Thus, We can conclude by saying that in microeconomics, we have a very microscopic approach, whereas under macro, we have a very aggregate approach. And it's beautifully said that in macro, we study the whole forest, whereas under micro, we just study each single tree, that is each concept one at a time. With that, we have come to the final conclusion of this chapter second, where we have successfully covered various variables which are very popularly used in business, our day-to-day language, and how they are understood in the subject of economics. Well, so with that, we have come to the end of the chapter where we have understood the various concepts that are used in economics as well as in business. We always talk about average and marginal performance of employees, average and marginal increase in price. We always speak about consumption, companies becoming monopolist, optimum utilization of resources and various things. So these are all the concepts which economists have understood and they have tried to connect it with the business world. I hope you have understood the topics. And with that, we wind up today's session for chapter second. Goodbye.